Welcome. This is Ikana Day Unplugged, and it is Tuesday, July 25th, 2017. I am Ann Picker, Ikana Day's chief economist, and with me today is Mark Pender in the U.S. Jeremy Hawkins, our man in London, is away. Mark, as we speak, we are vigiling tomorrow's FOMC announcement. Fed watchers typically expect no change in policy at meetings that don't have a press conference. But watchers don't exactly ignore it. Rather, they parse the post-meeting statement closely for clues regarding future actions. And in this case, they are looking for a clue about when the Fed will begin reducing its balance sheet.
Yes, we'll be looking for language. They have to set up a specific set of sentences and wording to start the movement on the unwinding of the balance sheet. But we can't rule out a rate action. Past Federal Reserves were famous for surprise moves, especially if they want to get everyone's attention and show who's boss. It's not expected. The spin on the Fed recently is a little bit dovish, considering how low inflation has been. But if they wanted to, flex their muscles, they could, that has to be in the back of everyone's mind. But there will be no updates on the FOMC forecast. There will be no press conference. The statement could include wording on whether how they're going to unwind. The expectation is generally pushed to December that the unwinding will begin, but it could be a hawkish statement could bring those up to September.
Mark, hasn't sentiment shifted to the rate increase in December and possibly a start to the balance sheet reduction in September?
I think that on the former, that the rate hike is still one expected this year, and then it's likely, most likely to be in December. But the beginning of the winding, I'm not sure that September is certainly talked about, but I think it's still a toss-up for the December meeting. And again, we're talking about those are the big meetings, as it were. Those were the meetings with the Janet Yellen's press conference, the September and the December, and also with the FOMC forecast. So that would give them a lot more area, a lot more space to describe what they're doing.
Go ahead. Consumer confidence really was very strong this morning.
Yes,
and it still confounds me, at least, how confidence can be quite so high given actual data.
Well, it's Tuesday here, and we had the monthly consumer confidence report, and it is showing no signs whatsoever of really easing back from the post-election surge. It's really at nearly 20-year highs. And this is in sharp contrast to the consumer sentiment report, which has been slowly ebbing, and then showed a more serious decline in mid-month, the week before last. They had the mid-month July report, which completely points in the other direction. And then the weekly consumer comfort index is also slowing sharply or noticeably. You still have to, these levels, however, in all these reports, especially the consumer confidence from the conference board, that was this morning's report, are still very optimistic. There's a lot more optimists than there are pessimists. There's just fewer optimists in some of the reports. But the consumer confidence, it was a very impressive report. They also had very solid showing for jobs. Both the assessment of the current jobs market was very strong, which points to a strong July employment report and perhaps a more downward pull on the unemployment rate. But it's not going, it doesn't doesn't seem to be equating to any inflationary pressures. And of course, that's what the Fed is really banking on, is that the low rate of unemployment is going to pull up wage inflation. It hasn't happened yet. And it's not appearing at all in the Consumer Confidence Report, where, like all the other reports about inflation expectations, are very low.
Mark, we also have this week the first estimate of second quarter GDP on Friday, along with the annual three-year revisions. In other words, mm-hmm. we get a chance to relearn history.
That's right.
Personal income spending revisions will be announced on Monday.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What are expectations?
Well, it's hard to get expectations for revisions. I think there are some expectations that the income will be revised upward, mostly, if not entirely, because the income readings have been so flat. And there are indications, perhaps, that people pushed income into this year after the election in expectation of lower tax rates. And so that's going to wash out a little bit. We're going to see how that plays out. But I think in the revisions are always a wild card, and the growth has been very, very soft, this expansion. And if we do see any kind of improvement, I don't know if there's real much of expectations for that. But as far as the second quarter goes, there are expectations for improvement. The Econoday consensus is at a 2.6% annualized rate, which would be up from 1.4%. Now, that's a good solid rate. It's not the rate that everyone had been anticipating after how weak the first quarter was, where everyone was looking for, or many were looking for, a higher rate. I think it's important here to note that the 2.6% rate, it also includes a 2.8% Econoday consensus for consumer spending annualized rate. Now, that is a very high rate, as I think that's probably, there might be some downside risk to that estimate, given that retail sales this quarter have been flat. Service sales are still unreported yet for June, and they could be very strong, and they're the bulk of consumer spending, so two-thirds of it. So it could be that we do get a strong rate for consumer spending. And it's also important to note that the inflation has been so low. When you deflate these numbers, it's an advantage for the current quarter, the second quarter, to have a low inflation rate in price adjusted terms. The deflator will subtract less from that number for the real price adjusted rate. So that's a little nuance, but it is very important, and it is going to have an effect. But it does look, I mean, the expectations are for a solid rate, but to return to the prices, the expectations for the price index are only 1.2%, which would be down from 1.9%. So that's going to give a lift to the adjusted numbers.
The UK is also posting its estimates, its first estimates for second quarter GDP this week. In fact, tomorrow, Wednesday. Expectations are for GDP to increase 0.3% on the quarter and 1.7% from the same quarter a year ago. Note, the UK does not annualize its data like the US. The expected growth rate is slightly higher than the first quarter outcome on the quarter basis, where GDP was up 0.2%, but it's lower than the annual change, which was 2% in the first quarter. Markets don't like uncertainty. And the dollar continues to crumble. I guess that's an appropriate word. Of course, this morning, the euro surged above $1.17, a level not seen in 2 years, for a landmark point. January 1st, the euro was $1.04 and change, just for comparison purposes. But it's not only against the euro. The dollar is down against all of its major counterparts, the yen, the pound sterling, the Australian and Canadian dollars, and the Swiss franc. In part, it underscores how strong the euro has been this year, which is a surprise to many currency strategists because many thought the currency would sink to parity by now. Instead, it's gone in the opposite direction.
Well, you know, Anne, if you're an exporter, you wouldn't really say the dollar is crumbling. You would consider the dollar to be highly overvalued, and now it's just a little less overvalued. So that's
right. Oh, I realize that. It's all in the point of view.
But that dollar movement is very, very striking, and that's going to be, you know, that's going to help the U.S. inflation outlook a little bit. We'll be, you know, getting less for our money on imports, which will raise imported inflation, which will be a positive here.
Yeah. The IMF, for example, delivered a warning to the ECB, who is looking to wind down their bond buying, urging the ECB to keep its extraordinary stimulus in place until there's more evidence of inflationary pressures. The inflation is only up 1.3% on the year in the eurozone, which, you know, is pretty much comparable to what we have here. And in fact, it's within the range of globally what inflation is, of course, excluding Japan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a worldwide thing. It's not just the U.S.
It is. And, you know, when you see we're talking about income revisions coming up, and there's a desire, I think, or a need to raise the numbers we've been seeing, but people can find details in the U.S. data. But if you look at it, like you're saying, globally, it's a global phenomenon. You know, it's happening everywhere. So maybe we're not going to see the kind of revisions that some people expect.
Exactly. And on that happy note, we'll call it a day.